From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudet. More Idaho Matters right now. You may know Patrick Hines as one of the voices behind the tremendously successful podcast, True Crime Obsessed. What you may not know is that Patrick is also a self-professed failure. Those are his words, not mine. And today, he is joining us to talk about his life, his new book, Failure is Not an Option, and his recent book tour around the country. Patrick, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be talking to you.
Okay, let's start with a little bit of background, maybe, for folks who may not be as obsessed with your podcast as I am. So you grew up on the East Coast. You had a single mom, and kind of take us from there with kind of your obsession, really, with, you know, wanting to be what, an actor, a dancer, and yes. You know, where that went.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. The subtitle kind of says it all, like how the chubby gay son of a Jesus-obsessed lesbian found, you know, family and love and podcast success. That's kind of the story. Like, we grew up poor and weird and awkward, but like, my mom has this incredible disposition. Like, she's never unhappy and she can always like find the bright side in any situation. So I guess I kind of got that from her. And that was kind of my growing up. You know, I always wanted to be on stage. I always wanted to make people laugh. I always wanted people looking at me and listening to me. And I always was the kid that the teacher had to shush because I was too loud and excited to talk about things. And somehow that, you know, sort of, I found my way from acting to, I worked in radio for a while, to that kind of became like a transition into podcasting, and kind of here mm-hmm. we are.
So I have to say, I love truly just the title of the book, Failure is Not an Option.
Yeah.
And, right? Because I don't know about you. So I've got a 15-year-old and I've got an almost 12-year-old. And I literally had a conversation with my 15-year-old the other day because he was kind of giving me a hard time about, you know, he's like, why do you want me to like try out for this sport? Or why do you want me to do this or do that? And I just said to him, I go, because I don't want you to have any regret. And if you don't try, guess what?
Yeah.
That is the best no. You know what's going to happen. It's going to be a no. And you're going, right? And you're going to have more no's in your life than you're ever going to have yeses. Like, you're going to hear more no's. So how do you pick yourself up from the no? And I really felt that in your book.
Thank you so much. One of the things I was trying to convey in the book, the reason, like, you know, the failure is not an option, is what people say, right? And, you know, my like the funny gay twist, and I was like, failure is not an option. Like, because you have to be willing to try things. Like, that's my big overarching point here, is that failing is fine because it means that you tried. Yeah. And if you tried, you showed up for yourself. And like, that's the best thing we can do. If you can show up for yourself and take a risk and take a chance, yes, a lot of times things aren't going to work out, but sometimes things are going to work out. And when things don't work out, you know, the best thing you can do for yourself is try to laugh at it and figure out what the lesson is and grow from it. I always say my husband is a very old soul. He's been here a million times. I'm like a baby. I'm a brand. This is my first time in this universe. This is my first go at this existence. And I make mistakes. I stumble through life. And sort of as I went, I learned that if you can kind of laugh at yourself and try to take lessons from things, then like you just have more fun, you know, and you, and you just like life just feels better when you approach it that way.
Well, you know, it's interesting too. You talk a lot about your mom, right? And kind of her attitude. I kind of felt that in a way about my dad. And I remember I tried out for cheerleading in high school. I didn't make it. I was so upset. And I remember my dad took me out to, you know, for dessert after. And I was just, I remember I was so upset. And he just looked at me and, you know, just simple was like, he goes, well, it just wasn't meant for you. It just means there's something else out there for you.
Yeah.
And right?
And that's a hard thing to hear sometimes, but it's a, you know, really like the failure is not a reflection on you. It's just the universe way of saying, like, nope, this isn't the right door. This is, and that doesn't mean you can't try out for cheerleading the next year. You know what I mean?
Right.
It just means that, like, it wasn't your journey today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, okay, like, so I spent, you know, 18 months of my life prepping and, you know, preparing to open a daycare, getting licensed and selling our furniture and turning our tiny little apartment into a home daycare. It was my dream. And then the kids showed up and I was like, oh, I don't really like kids that aren't my own, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was like, after a week, we shut the daycare down. We worked 18 months to make that thing happen. And I just remember the morning I woke up and was like, I can't do this another day. Like, it's not fair to the kids. It's not fair to me. It's not fair to my family. I can't do this. I will be miserable. And I, this is a failure and I have to just move on.
Okay. But here's the thing with that is that I think sometimes in our culture, it's this idea of you just power through, right? You made this decision, you just power through. And I frankly think there is something to be said about having a recognition and an acknowledgement that it's like, you know what? I made a poor choice and I need to get myself out of this, right? Because like, this isn't good for anyone.
Right. Like, yes. You gotta like, I think that by the time the daycare happened, I was old enough to be able to recognize in myself that I really gutturally hated it. And, you know, so I knew there was just no way I could do that every day for the rest of my life. I do think there are times when you have to, things are hard and you have to challenge yourself and you do have to persevere and push through. But as you get older and you know yourself better, it's okay to give yourself permission to say like, nope. And I was wrong. The monkey mural's got to go and we need furniture back and I can't watch these kids for one more day.
There you go. Okay. Then how did you find yourself in podcasting, in particular, True Crime Obsessed podcast? Because you're not just a co-host. I mean, you co-created this and it has exploded. And I mean, that's an understatement.
Oh, thanks. You know, it's funny. I was a theater kid and I had been listening to podcasts. There was a theater podcast that I loved that a man was making. He stopped making it. I just assumed that somebody else would start and nobody did. So then I was like, you know what? I'm going to make that. I don't know how to make a podcast. I'm going to learn. And I just became obsessed with it. I just became obsessed with it. And then I had the great fortune to meet Jillian Pensavalli, who was also making a theater podcast. And we just became friends through that world. And the more we got to know each other, the more we realized that we both loved true crime. And I was really looking for the kind of podcast that we could make that maybe, just maybe, we could make a living making if all the stars aligned. And true crime really felt like the genre because that's where people were kind of succeeding. And it just turned out that we both love true crime documentaries. And we're like, let's figure out how to do a thing with that. And I never meant for it to be funny. And she's really funny. And we're like, let's watch a documentary and then we'll kind of recap it. And we did. And our first recording, like, she was just cracking me up. And I was like, oh my God, I think this is the podcast. No, there was a lot of true crime podcasts, but nobody was doing anything related to documentaries. And, you know, we were really hyper aware of that any kind of humor had to be in the right moments, that it was never about victim shaming or victim blaming or laughing at the crime or anything like that. And all of that sort of happened organically. And I remember listening back through, you know, I edited the first episode. And after editing through it, I listened back to it and I was like, wow, there is nothing like this out there. Our chemistry is amazing. I really think we should go for this.
Well, I have to tell you, I mean, here's what I really appreciate about your podcast. I mean, I love true crime. I was sneaking and rule books at 8 years old. I don't know what, how my mom didn't figure that out. I don't know. But, but with that said, I mean, I love true crime. I like true crime podcasts, but I also think that they can sometimes be problematic. Right. And in the sense of that victim shaming or making the story kind of about the perpetrator and not the victim.
Yeah,
so for sure. What I like about, right? And what I like about your podcast is that you make the victim in this front and center. You make sure that we know who they are. But at the same time, it's funny. And I don't have to sit through watching a documentary. I can just listen to you and Jillian when I'm like putting my makeup on in the morning.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny that like we used to call ourselves a true crime comedy podcast. We don't really anymore. I think because the implication is that there's nothing to laugh about. What we're laughing about, like we are just people who use humor to diffuse anger and frustration. And how could this happen? And how could this happen all the time? And what do you mean this area is a known dumping grounds? Like that is the most ridiculous thing you could, if it's a known dumping ground, then why aren't there 40 police officers there at all times? You know what I mean? And so like, that's where the humor comes from. And that's where, you know, we're just like, we laugh because if we didn't, we would just kind of like be in tears. And we've really evolved. We've been making it for almost 7 years now. We've really evolved with the times. We, you know, we get a lot of feedback from our listeners and we're always sort of learning and adapting and getting better. And we really think there's value in telling these stories and keeping these victims' names out there. A lot of these cases are unsolved. So you never know what's going to be the thing that the person is going to hear that actually knows what happened. And you know, we've really built a community around the podcast that a lot of people really love and really need it. So it's filled a lot of holes for people. It's really wonderful.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. And so on top of all of this, you mentioned your husband. You two are in business together.
Yes.
I love my husband.
Yes.
I don't know if I could work with him on a daily basis, but I will tell you this. I think that we have a very good kind of like a derelict. I mean, like we split the duties well, right? I mean, I always say the only reason why I have any money is because my husband's in charge of it. Right?
Yeah, same.
That's just the way it is.
I'm kind of like the big ideas one in the family. And when I wanted to, you know, start a podcast and he was super supportive of it and we didn't work together always. It was kind of just me. And as True Crime Obsessed became more successful, we just needed help and we needed somebody who could like make sure the taxes get paid and knew how to handle the. Yeah, because Jillian and I are like, we would be in jail for sure. Not because we don't want to pay the taxes. We just don't know how. So we need somebody to come in and do that. And he manages all of our touring and he manages them. He's just a numbers guy. He's also a very creative person himself, but it's the perfect situation of like, I wanted to do the creative side and he's great at all of the sort of behind the scenes stuff. And it was just kind of like, all right, it really works.
Isn't that great though? When that happens?
So lucky. I mean, if I had married another person that was like me, I don't know. Like, I feel like I would never see my husband because I work so much, you know? So it's kind of, it really is like a perfect marriage on all the levels.
Okay, and can we just talk about the references that you make in the book, throughout the book, really, about you being a slob? And you say the book, you're like, look, this is in my DNA. So,
slovenliness.
Right. So, Steve, you knew this. And now it's, here it is in writing.
No, it's true. I'm the guy that, like, leaves the dishes in the sink. I leave the half and half on the counter every day. Like, I'm a big old sloppy mess.
Okay, so what cracked me up about it, though, is I'm the exact opposite. Like, my husband calls me Monica from Friends. Because everything, like, literally... Okay, so for example, I came out into our living room one day, and he goes, look, honey, I picked it up, so it looks like no one lives here. And I was like, it looks great!
Yeah, it's kind of like that. Like, he loves chores. He loves to pack and unpack. We just spent one night at a hotel. He packed the full suitcase, completely unpacked when we got there. I'm like, babe, we are leaving at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. Like, what?
Doesn't matter.
Like, just leave it in the suitcase. Nope. Unpacks, folds the clothes, puts them in the drawers. I'm like, oh my God. And I was just saying, like, I've been touring a lot lately, and I will be in a hotel room for like 30 minutes. And it looks like Johnny Depp from like his crazy party years when he was like trashing the hotels at the Cannes Film Festival. I'm like, I've been here for 15 minutes. How is this room a wreck? And how is that chair upside down? How did that happen?
Yeah. Who knows? Right. I know.
You know?
So, okay. So speaking of that, as you said, you've been touring. I'm super curious about this. So what went into the decision? Of course, touring, you've got your new book and all of that. But to include like certain stops in really more kind of not friendly LGBTQ areas, certain place. I mean, I don't like to generalize and say, oh, all of Florida is this way or all of Texas is this way or where I live, all of Idaho is this way. That's not the case. However, there is legislation that sometimes makes it feel like that. So where was the decision making in that?
You know, it was funny because the book just came out on Tuesday, September 26th. I've been touring since January. So like I was on a pre-tour. Like I took one of the chapters and turned it kind of into a show. And we did all the major cities. Like we did the Bostons and the LAs and the Seattles and, you know, but then it was kind of like I would hear from the listeners where they wanted me to go. And I was like, all right, I mean, if you guys are going to turn up, then I'll go anywhere. And I'm a big believer in bringing it to the people. Like I want to go into all those red places. I can't tell you how many, you know, like partners that I meet that get brought to my shows by people who love the podcast. And especially when it's men, not to generalize, I'm always kind of like, what'd you think? Because it's very liberal. It's very, very gay. It's very whatever. And they always have the best times. And I'm like, I never know, but I'm like, did I just change a mind? Am I your first gay friend?
Right.
Like, I think that's so valuable. You know,
yeah,
I'm like,
exactly.
See, I'm not scary. We're just normal. I've got a husband and a kid. Like I'm just like you. So I love going to places that are a little unexpected.
And you have a kid that throws fits just like every other kid, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So exactly. When you decided to do this, what has that been like for you in the sense of knowing that some of these, you know, laws in these states don't support, you know, LGBTQIA legislation.
Yeah. Well, so for example, we have a big fan convention every year called Obsessed Fest. And we did it.
It's coming up in October.
Yep. And the first one was in Columbus. The second one is in Dallas. And, you know, we have a huge listenership in Dallas and in Texas in general. And we, you know, we decided to do the convention there for a lot of reasons. I mean, so many reasons go into picking a city. My biggest concern is always I want it to be affordable for people to come. So like that, you know, you can't play the bigger cities that where it's just much more expensive. And so Dallas was available. A lot of cities aren't available because COVID pushed everything back. So that was another factor. But honestly, when we decided to go there, we knew that we wanted to go in there, bring our big, fabulous gay selves and our drag queens, and then also raise money for local organizations that need it and are suffering. You know, I am not a boycott Texas person. I am a go to Texas and raise funds for the people who are there, who are doing the work. So we're raising money for an abortion access organization, and we're raising money for a trans education network. And we're looking to raise $25,000 for each organization. And I think that's so valuable. I think sometimes it's more important to go to the places that that have the bad legislation. You know, I think we have to go there and help.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more, because I think that it's one of these things where sometimes we get so siloed, right? And I do believe that we tend to have more in common than not. We just sometimes forget that as a society. But also, it's one of these things where I'm like, look, gay people have been around for time immemorial, right?
Yes.
And they're not going anywhere.
Exactly.
And it is one of these things where sometimes I feel like our laws are very draconian, and they do not... Yep. They're not keeping up with society, right?
Yep.
And you're right. It's like you've done enough hiding. So why continue that in spaces that may not seem welcoming, if that makes sense?
100%. And like, if we can go and raise funds for these like these are little tiny organizations. Like the Trans Education Network of Texas is, they like go down to, like they go and meet with legislators every single day to talk to them about how to talk about trans issues, just to educate and bring awareness. It's like this tiny little organization that if we can bring some funding to it and they can grow a little bit and really spread the word, it's like, it's an honor to be able to do that.
So what has the response been then? As you said, I mean, you know, you mentioned, you know, some, you know, people bringing their partners, and a lot of times it's men, and they're like, oh, I like the show. But I mean, overall, what has the response been everywhere you've gone? Not just in these more red areas.
It is very, I mean, people love it. You know, what was fun about doing this tour before the book came out was I took chapter two of the book, which is called Small Part, Big Actor, which is really about like my high school drama club drama, but it's also kind of the story of my first love and like the first time I had sex. And like it's not graphic, it's funny and it's sweet. And I think that it's like people hadn't read it. So like the next show that I'm going to go do, people will have read it. So they'll kind of know what's coming. But there are moments where the audience is just on pins and needles, not knowing what's going to happen next. And that is a really beautiful thing. And then, you know, it's amazing that I'll stay after every show and do a meet and greet with anybody who wants to like hang out. And sometimes everybody stays. Like sometimes the meet and greet is twice as long as the show. And it's so great to like get to meet people and take pictures. And I love it when people that will bring somebody and the person is like, I had no idea what this was, but oh my God, I can't wait to go subscribe to your podcast and read your book. And it's just nice to be able to bring fun, funny stories to people. It's a really nice thing to get to do with my life.
Well, I have to say what I appreciate too about the book is that when I read it, I literally can hear you in my head. Like it is you sound in the book like you sound, you know, on your podcast. I mean, there is nothing pretentious about this. You are not trying to be anything that you aren't.
No, thank you for saying that. The voice of it was very important to me. I needed it. It was so funny. I would talk to my editors at the publisher because they don't understand why I would like capitalize certain things, or like there are certain sentences where I would put a period after every word. I can't think of a good example now, but it's just sort of like, I told her to shut the hell up. And you have to like, in order for it to sound like what it sounds like, you have to capitalize every word and put a period after it. And they're like, explain this grammar to me. And I would have to explain the joke to them. But in the end, it really does sound like me, which is wild. I recorded the audiobook, which came out the same day. And like getting to record the book exactly how I wanted it to sound was also amazing.
Oh, it had to have been. Well, yeah. I have to say it has been just, it's such an easy read. And it is funny. Okay, the fact that you didn't know what the term elbow grease was when you
really
started working in a restaurant. I mean, come on, Patrick. I mean, that is...
I know. And those guys sent me around the restaurant for hours. Go find the elbow grease. And like that poor waitress, I still remember her name to this day. Her name was Laura, who took pity on me and walked up behind me and just went... And that was a big moment of like, oh my God. They want me to be humiliated, but I'm not. This is hilarious, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It is honestly, it is fun. I appreciate it so much. And I want to thank you for your time today. It has been such a pleasure talking with you.
So great talking to you. Thank you for having me. I will come back anytime.
We would love to have you. And oh my gosh, I'm just fangirling a little bit because I love your podcast. So really,
thank you so much. That's
appreciate
so nice. I love that you love it.
I do. We've been talking with co-host of the True Crime Obsessed podcast, Patrick Hines, talking about his new book, Failure is Not an Option. It is available now. Get yourself a copy. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudet. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is my voice. It can tell you a lot about me, and I'm not changing it for anyone. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of NPR episodes centered on the Black experience. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get podcasts.